Okay, welcome back to the Veef Show. We're at the exciting part of the show.
This is not the Veef Show.
Oh. Okay. Whatever you say, Jack. You're the master race.
Yeah, close enough.
All right, welcome to the Otaku DX Show, Side B. Okay, Elgheim. I only have one episode to talk about, because I only watched one recently.
Is it that hard to get through? Because I was expecting you to say you were done with the show by now.
I'm on, like, episode 37 out of 52.
Man. You know, I can't say anything because I've been stuck on like episode 40 of a lot of shows.
Yeah. Plus, you know, I had stuff to do. Mm-hmm. More Jetpack Joyride to play.
Would you agree with me now that that is the best game ever made?
I will agree. Although I still don't understand the pricing on the stuff you actually have to pay for with real money.
Well, first off, you're playing the game wrong by being in there.
Huh?
You're playing the game wrong by being in the part where you actually have to pay money for.
Well, I didn't pay any money. I was just curious to see what there was actually there. Because I would figure most people would just buy the double coins for life one and not
yeah,
worry.
Yeah, that's what most people get.
And not worry about the other two. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, once you get certain items, you can just kind of get a ton of coins anyway through each playthrough. So,
you just break the game.
Yeah, pretty much. And now I realize why it's a one-button game, because it's also for Android and iPad and all that stuff.
You didn't know that?
No, I was just like, wait, this seems like such a simple game for a console. It's like, oh, it's a tablet game.
Easy port.
Yeah. Anyway, so I have to say that this episode of Elgheim actually left me kind of aghast. Or guess, or whatever.
Really?
Because I was like, they're not going to do what I think they're going to do, are they? And they did. And it was kind of not that great. Because they open up having two of the bad guys stage a fight in order to get Daba and his friends to come and rescue one of them. It's like, you've seen this plot 12 trillion times. Except for this guy. This time it was the old guy who's one of the Elite 13 in the Poseidal Army. And old guy, you know, manages to worm his way into Daba's inner sanctum, and his friends come along with him, and they kind of bust up some things and attempt to blow up the Elgheim Mark II. They did manage to blow up the arm of the original Elgheim, though. But that's okay, because Amu just kind of goes off in a one-armed Elgheim anyway, because she's now the Elgheim's pilot, because, hey, we can reuse that footage if we want.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of drama where Daba learns that the old guy's son wanted to be a revolutionary as well, and he died because of it. And, you know, that's kind of where you get the pathos from the episode, because, the old guy eventually kicks the bucket, blocking a shot that was meant for Daba. So this is really the first major death in the series. I'm not really feeling it, though.
It's an old guy, who cares?
Well, I mean, he was in a couple of episodes trying to, like, you know, be a smartass and give Gable advice. And Gable, who is still, it's like, it's almost towards the end of the series, he's still a goofball. It's like, guys, I can't take his goofiness. Because they're trying to get more serious. I mean, they introduced this one of the other Elite 13, this woman named Lily, who is a bit of a misanthropist. But we learn that her whole thing is that she wants to remain young and beautiful forever. So she's very jealous of Poseidal, who is able to do this through the power of bio-relation. But I do like the one part where she's angrily clipping her toenails in Gable's presence. Because, you know, them women's always doing their toenails. Ha ha.
All the time. That's all they do with their spare time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of silly. Mm-hmm. I keep hearing the show gets a lot more serious, but it's like, does the show get serious in like the last 12 episodes?
Yeah, it's like, does it actually make sense when it gets serious? Or is this just going to keep going,
well,
this train, and all of a sudden there's a drastic change?
Well, remember, this is the show right before Zeta Gundam. which is, you know, mostly serious business.
Yeah.
Unlike most 80s shows. But yeah. I also beginning with AKB-0048. I guess because you're not caught up yet, I won't quite go into that. I also started watching Straight Titled Robot Anime on Crunchyroll. The thing that was done by the guys who did GD Fairies, or however you pronounce GD Fairies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like the initial reaction to this show was kind of negative because they tricked us.
I actually haven't seen it yet.
Because if you remember the description of how it's about a show where a young robot in a future where humans no longer exist and all that crap, I mean, that's technically true. But then after the intro with the Jam Project music, and, you know, it looks all right because Mika Mika dance animation. And then we zoom in on three robot girls. It's like, oh, I see where this is going.
No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, so this is a comedy.
All my hopes and dreams have been shattered.
All your hopes and dreams have been shattered because this is just a sketch comedy.
All right, I'm looking at the... Oh, God. Episode 1 description. The robots try to discover what it means to laugh.
That is the running theme of the episode from the two episodes I've seen. I mean, I think the thing with it is that the jokes aren't really laugh-out-loud funny because, they're robots. They don't really know what humor is. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to be like... one bit in the second episode I really liked where they're doing imitations. And there's the three robots. There's Fuji, Kato, and Mori. Mm-hmm. I think I got the middle one's name right. Fuji is the most human-looking one. She's a, you know, cute maid robot girl. She is a maid robot. Kato is a slightly more robotic character who is a very, you know, studious, kind of the smart one of the group. And then Mori is an industrial robot who's very abstract and has a speech pattern to match her more robotic look. Mm-hmm. And her power is she can transform her limbs into anything as an industrial robot. And, you know, their whole thing is they're trying to discover how to laugh again, hoping that this will end the war. Because it's really boring just to watch the combat robots fighting all the time. Mm-hmm. But they figured out one way to get to laughing was to do imitations. And I like the part where Kato just takes off her head and lays down. And they're like, what are you doing? And then she explains, I was doing an imitation of the mass-produced robots. Yeah, see, it's a lot of quiet chuckles. You know, yeah. not laugh out loud stuff. And now that I know that's the whole premise of the book or of the show is trying to rediscover laughter, I'm kind of getting it. You know, it's a bit more meta. Mm-hmm. The show is basically done in three segments. It's only about like less than 15 minutes long. They have the initial thing where they're outside and they try to do something funny. The middle segment, which is probably going to be the part everyone's going to mix together on YouTube, is where they come up with an idea of how to change, to simulate a huge change in the world. Mm-hmm. And this comes with them figure out some kind of thing that will affect the opening of the show. Like, the first thing they figure out they wanted to do is that making things slippery often makes stuff funny. So they simulate the world being covered in oil. And all the robots doing their badass, you know, fight poses in the opening are now sliding over and smashing into things.
I see.
Yeah. And then the third part of it is that they have a bunch of different items that are from the human world. And they're like, okay, what's this? I have a traffic cone and a broom. I'm going to fly. And they're like, I thought humans don't fly. You know, and they kind of go off from there. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that works for this show is that it also has a hard-selling narrator who's very serious all the time.
serious narrators always make series like this better.
Yeah, because at the point where at the end the voice actors kind of they usually like break character and start to just chuckle a bit at what's going on. And the narrator says it's like they're not actually laughing. That is interference from radio signals or something like that. So he's kind of like being there to like hard sell all the jokes they're doing as being like super important and stuff. But yeah, it's a cute show. I guess I really shouldn't have expected it to be a serious robot show.
I was expecting it to be stupid. I just didn't expect it to be this brand of stupid, but I'll be sure to check it out because I didn't realize it was out. I was like, when is this coming out again?
Oh, yeah. It's on Crunchyroll, although I must admit I watched the second episode on a fan sub because I couldn't wait for Crunchyroll.
Mm.
I was like, well, you guys are not getting my business because you're too slow. You want me to buy a friggin' pass? It's like, sorry, I don't feel like doing that. yeah, one thing, cool thing, though, is that they have a different kind of stinger picture at the end, like ones is them all done up like, oh, Amuro and Sayla with the one of the robots in the back as like the Gundam. And the recent episode it was like a Votoms thing.
It's pretty cool though.
So there's your wallpaper fodder. I don't think I've been watching a whole lot else.
Really?
I think I might pick up the Idol Defense Force Hummingbirds show because somebody posted a video of that. And I was like, oh, it's a show where idols pilot airplanes. And this is an older OVA from like the late 90s, I think. It's like, could be good. You know, I enjoyed Stratos 4 for what it is. Although I did notice in this clip that it offended some of my airplane sensibilities. Because really? They show them scrambling a bunch of MiG-25s to intercept them in their, you know, maneuverable future jet. It's like, no, that's not what MiG-25s are for, guys. Come on, do your research. Watch Rings of Russia. Didn't exist back then. I don't care.
You know, you never did talk about that.
Oh. Rings of Russia, it's just, you can Google it. It's a documentary made it about the Russian Air Force and also their commercial airplanes. It is dubbed by someone who is obviously a bilingual speaker, but, you know, not someone who learned English in the very beginning, because he kind of has a strange syntax and kind of a weird pronunciation of words like pylon is pilon when he pronounces it. Or he'll say something is remains in the category of experimentation. But he wants to say that it remained just an experimental airplane. But it's perfectly understandable. It's fascinating to someone like me. And one thing I appreciate about these Russian documentaries, I actually watched another one that wasn't in Wings of Russia, is that they're pretty open and honest about, you know, they're proud of their triumphs, but they're also honest about their failures and shortcomings as well.
That always helps with things like that.
You know, seeing as how they're the ones who lost the Cold War. I think one of my favorite little bits of trivia was, how pilots of the Tu-22 bomber refused to fly it at some points because the plane had downward firing ejection seats and also had a very high landing speed. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why would you have downward firing ejection seats? This is not as uncommon as you think it is.
Really?
It was a solution for when the airplane traveled at very high speeds. It had a very large tail fin, and there was a lot of concern with what would happen if the pilot ejected it at high speed and they hit the tail fin, because that's a dead pilot right there.
Yeah.
The F-104 Starfighter with its distinctive T-shaped tail fin also initially had downward firing ejection seats. The idea being is that you would probably eject at high altitude, because that's how these airplanes would operate. The problem is you can't obviously do that upon landing
because
you're going to hit the ground.
Pretty hard, probably.
Yeah. I think they might have also done it with helicopters at some point. There's been various experiments to make to give helicopters an ejection seat, but a lot of times they could just kind of coax it in because of auto rotation. The rotors will still spin as air passes over them. So you kind of coax the thing in if the engine shuts off. So yeah, that's Wings of Russia. I'm running out of episodes, and I was like, oh, but I wish there was more. The other documentary I watched was actually just subtitled in English, but it was all in Russian, about the Yak-38 vertical takeoff plane. Basically Russia's answer to the Harrier jump jet.
Oh, okay.
But it's a plane that's often maligned in American publications, but the pilot they interviewed, he seemed to love the plane. And all the other pilots seemed to love the plane a lot. You know, it's just kind of a weird, quirky little airplane.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that with Russian vertical takeoff airplanes, you like with the Harrier or, like with like Macross stuff, you have the engines just kind of duct the thrust downward. It's just one engine that ducts the thrust different ways to do the vertical takeoff. With the Yak-38, they couldn't quite do that. So instead it carries lift jets, which are just little tiny engines in the midsection of the plane that are only used for vertical or short takeoff. So, and one kind of fun thing is that in Macross Zero, the SU-51 does have lift jets. So that's kind of a nice little Russian touch.
How about that?
Yeah. So yeah. And also the modern F-35, the vertical takeoff ones, also technically have a lift jet, a lift fan in the middle. So yeah, that's what I've been watching.
That's cool. I've been watching some stuff. Because I need to get through this damn stack of DVDs already. I got around to watching an anime. It's a rewatching, actually, because I did watch this once before, at least the first season's worth. This anime called Black Lagoon.
A little-known anime.
Yeah. Which, what I found the most amusing upon watching this a second time after knowing more about stuff is, you know how a lot of seinen mangas and whatnot tend to be escapism, right? You know, it's like an average salaryman. He doesn't want to worry about his job. It's just, let's read about something that, you know, I could never do or something like that.
Be Google 13.
Yes. This is one of those stories. It's one of the best kinds because it's about this dude known as Rokuro Okajima, who's just your average Japanese salaryman. And he's a really good translator and negotiator and things like that. And at one point, he is essentially declared dead by the company he works at because of a missile deal they did under the table. And so he ends up working with a group of pirates. And he then becomes known as Rock because his name is Rokuro. And they go around, you know, stealing shit and doing bounty jobs and, you know, doing all sorts of naughty stuff involving killing lots and lots of people.
And everyone loves Revy.
Revy is pretty awesome.
Because she has the same voice as Clown Clown from Macross Frontier. Mm-hmm. And one of the Precure characters, too.
Is she?
I think she's Cure Beat.
You're right, she is. You're totally right. I can hear that now. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because I saw some crossover artwork of Revy just dressing up as Cure Beat.
Yes, all of that Cure Beat art now makes sense to me. Yeah. I was like, okay, I guess they kind of look alike, but why is everyone drawing this? Oh, now it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. They're always doing the voice actor jokes.
I didn't realize she was Mirealia from Gundam Seed either. Things you learn on Wikipedia. But, the show is lots of fun. It's super violent. The second season is way more violent than the first, and I love it. Like, kids getting shot in the head, which sounds terrible out of context, but it's okay because they're killers.
Stone cold killer.
Nah, this show is fantastic. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's awesome.
Cool.
In addition to that, I've also been keeping up with a couple other things coming out right now, including Tamako Market, still. Which, this is my favorite show from this season, I think. I mentioned this last weekend, but one thing I did not mention is that this show is not based on anything. It's a completely original anime, which I think gives them a lot of leeway to do whatever the heck they want.
Which is more cute girls doing cute things?
Yes and no. And this is what I love about this show. It does the same thing I love with a couple of other anime and also TV shows. The main one that I'll state myself is Harvey Birdman.
Oh, dear.
Which is... It's not as bad as you think. The comedy of the show is not necessarily from the main character themselves. The comedy comes from the reactions that other characters have to the main character, such that it's... The fact that... Let me give an example. In the most recent episode, all of the girls decide that, you know what, no one is coming to our shopping district, so we should have a haunted house. And all of a sudden, all the adults notice these really creepy things, like they think they see a ghost and they thought they saw a bloodied corpse in the streetway. And so they are all freaking out about the fact that this haunted house is actually going to cause a lot of trouble. And so they're like, Sloy Shring was like, oh, hey, you must be hungry. Here, have some salt that we're going to spray on the pavement. And just all these different things. And it is completely ridiculous. And it's very well done. And it's very subtle. At no point is it ever over the top, but it is still just as entertaining. Like, this is the closest I think anime has ever come to being slice of life without being boring.
Legitimate slice of life, not the sitcom-y.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, like, even though there is the character of the bird, who is also a projector,
mm-hmm.
who can talk, like, everyone is really normal in this show. And that's not necessarily to a detriment, because that means every single one of them has a very distinct personality. Like, the fact that one of the butcher has a crush on the girl who works at the bathhouse. And they don't mention it all the time, but, you know, they'll just have subtle interjections and lines of dialogue that'll hint towards that, and you can see it developing over the show. And when shows do really subtle things like that really help build a minor cast, that's when I find them to be the most enjoyable, and this show does that to a T.
Oh, by the way, Jonathan Furman said, do you need that email soon? Nah, not really.
Nah, you can wait.
Yeah.
It can wait.
It can wait.
Yeah. Tamako Market is great. I haven't talked about it as of recent, mostly because it's a show you can easily spoil, but I am still keeping up with the robotics notes, and number one, you need to watch this fucking show.
Who, me or you? Or them?
You.
Oh, me?
Everyone.
Them, okay.
Everyone.
Yeah.
It's about robots. Like, literally, the main girl is the girl that does not exist and that she loves anime or robots. And it's not done in a poor way at all.
Hey, come on. I watched a video from the Spoony One's girlfriend. And she was talking about how she used to love watching Wildcats.
Doesn't count.
Come on, Wildcats. Wildcats! No. One and but, only one. Okay.
So I'm talking about robotics now.
Actually,
here.
I think she said that if there's robots in it, she's always there. So there you go. Girl likes robots.
But we're at episode 18 right now, and some stuff just happened, and I feel like the show is suddenly going to really pick up because. The last, like, 17 episodes show, it's been a lot of character focusing and concluding a lot of character arcs, which doesn't mean... It's not saying that it's boring, but... Because actually a lot of those character arcs are pretty fantastic. But, shit essentially just hit the fan, and the show is notorious for having really bad cliffhangers. So I am very fascinated to see where the show is going to go from here.
Hmm.
Man, I don't think I've ever spent more time saying nothing right there.
Honestly, I don't have a whole lot else to go on with this segment, so...
I'll just do my thing.
Okay.
One thing I decided to check out real quick is the last one. Just because I was bored and I was like, why is there, like, 30 episodes of this already? Was, this thing called Puchimas. What this is one of those animes that air on Nico Nico Doga. And
so it's like three episodes. It's like 3 minutes long, right?
It's, yeah, 3 minutes long, which seems to be my thing this season. Between this, Mongirl, and Yamano Susume. But this is based on that creepy thing, Idolmaster. And basically the premise of the show, it's the stupidest thing in the world. What if little chibi versions of all the different girls from that game / TV show existed in tandem with the actual girls? And so it's just a show filled with them interacting with the chibis and the chibis doing cute things. And sometimes some of them have superpowers. Like, one of them is capable of multiplying if you pour water on it.
Hmm.
Another one can teleport. And another one just likes hating people if they have breasts larger than hers.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, one of their powers is that they're tsundere.
Yeah.
It's, I can't say this was a waste of time, if only because it took up like 30 minutes at most to watch. Because of those 3 minutes, half of the time is the ending song and the preview for the next episode.
Yeah. Actually, here's something a little different we can do. I'll talk about some movies that I rewatched recently.
All right.
I got an itch in my head. I needed to rewatch the old movie Toys. Have you seen that movie?
With Robin Williams?
Yes.
I've never actually seen it myself.
Yeah, I think it's a great movie, honestly. I understand it's kind of weird. I think because the thing is I looked up the trailer for it. I wanted to find a clip of it. Mm-hmm. And I found the trailer, the official trailer. And, man, that trailer is nothing like the movie.
Is it one of those really misleading ones?
I think what had happened is some poor sod had to, like, make this movie seem family-friendly.
Oh.
And make it seem like a real Christmas
dear.
Movie. I mean, it takes place around Christmas. It kind of opens and ends at a Christmas celebration. But it's not a Christmas movie at all. I mean, it's about... the basic premise is that the head of Zevo Toys, he is about to die. And he decides to hand it over to his brother. And his brother is a general in the army, played by Michael Gambon. And Michael Gambon is my favorite character in this movie. He plays my favorite character in this movie. Because he is... There's something, like, kind of human about his, like, manic, weird, like, somewhat unhinged behavior. He has kind of, like, he's got daddy issues, he's got an inferiority complex, but he's also really entertaining and kind of boisterous all the time. And he kind of really takes to running the toy factory as his way of, like, getting back into the military somehow.
What?
Well, the whole thing is that, not to spoil too much, is that Zevo Toys has never done war toys before. And he thinks that would be the best thing for the company. But then he has his own ideas of how to make war toys and how to make them relevant to the battlefield of the future.
Uh-huh.
Also, one kind of funny thing is when they go to check out the competition at a toy store, they have some nice loving shots of some old G.I. Joe toys. You're like, there's the Liquidator jet and the battle wagon in box looking really nice. And I have to wonder how Hasbro felt about having these toys in the movie after they finally saw it. Because it's kind of, again, it's weird. It's kind of dark. Because there's a whole thing where it's like, oh, Robin Williams plays the son of Zevo. He's Leslie. And he's kind of, you know, a goofball, but he's kind of serious about what he does because he heads up the gag department. So he's very serious about, like, you know, what's in the fake dog vomit. You know, stuff like that. You kind of have to see the movie. I'd love to do a Veef show about it because it's a movie I've watched many times before.
Now that I know you've seen it, I'll probably check it out in the near future. Yeah.
I would say it's definitely more of a movie for adults that's about toys than it is a kid's movie that happens to have toys. Mm-hmm. I think because it has things like a lot of old tin toys and wind-up toys versus the new, you know, plastic stuff.
Yeah.
And the war toys. Another movie I've rewatched because I was listening to the How Did This Get Made podcast, and I was like, huh, I saw this movie once for philosophy class, and I remember most of it, and their take on it was pretty hilarious. This movie is The Devil's Advocate. Have you seen this movie?
I have not heard of this before.
Okay, so let me set the stage for you. This is a movie starring Keanu Reeves as,
oh boy,
as a lawyer from Florida, and he does attempt to have an accent. Doesn't really stick for most of the time, but he does. You know, I am Kevin Lomax from Florida. And he is tapped by a law firm in New York, headed up by Al Pacino at his Al Pacinoiest.
Uh-huh.
Because I think you can guess who Al Pacino is playing in this movie.
You said you were watching this for philosophy class?
Yeah, I forget what was the reason why it was in philosophy class, because it was for this...
This sounds really silly.
Well, yeah,
right,
but
now
the thing is that the class was called Philosophy Through Fiction and Film. So there was a lot of watching movies, but it was things like Saving Private Ryan, you know, popular, like The Matrix, and we also watched Rashomon, which is a good thing for, you know, philosophy class in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what was the reason why we had this was picked for the class. I might still have the book somewhere, textbook that the professor wrote, of course.
Of course.
Oh, it's just, yeah, so the way they described, actually, I still want you to guess, like, who is Al Pacino?
Oh, I have no idea.
In The Devil's Advocate, who does Al Pacino play?
Just tell me.
Really? Come on, dude.
I'm dumb.
Well, he has many names. Satan?
Seriously?
Al Pacino plays the devil.
Okay. Like actual devil, he
is the devil.
Like the actual devil.
He is the devil, yes.
Like, I just woke up in hell. I guess it's time to go to work now.
Well, I mean, he's the devil, as you know, the devil would be as the head of a huge law firm.
Okay.
But it's kind of clever in some ways, but I think the How Did This Get Made guys said it best. This is a movie written by guys who hang out in cigar shops and like to say the word fuck a lot. Because, you know, the basic premise of the movie is that when Kevin goes to move to New York, he brings his wife with him. And, you know, things start to go awry. I also want you to note that Charlize Theron is in this movie playing Kevin's wife. And apparently she spent 4 hours a day with a therapist to prepare for how to act like a schizophrenic.
Jeez.
This is like, really? Because you are so freaking over the top in this movie.
Well, isn't that how actual schizophrenics act?
No,
absolutely not.
But yeah, just
4 hours of her day. Jeez.
You know, method actors, you know, that's how it works. Mm. But she also has an accent, but it's a little bit better than Keanu's.
It's not hard.
See, this movie, it's not really good, but it's kind of, it's really entertaining because everyone's going hard. Everyone is just going hard. Al Pacino is devouring the scenery and licking his upper lips as he does it. He has some great speeches where he just kind of says words, and and I mean that in that, like, what he's saying doesn't really make sense. It kind of does, but it's just like hearing.
It's just complete drivel.
Yeah, it's like just hearing him say things is just enrapturing. The way he acts in this movie is just like amazing. And that's really the entertainment value. It's kind of a long movie, though. It's like almost, it's over 2 hours. Doesn't.
Yeah, you've done a very poor job of making me actually want to move watch this movie.
I enjoyed it, rewatching it. It's just, it's kind of head-scratchingly weird at times. Mm. Not in the charming way that Toys is weird. Oh, yeah, one thing
just genuinely, like, what just happened?
Yeah, one thing I do like about Toys, I come to realize why I appreciate this, is that, okay, LL Cool J is in the movie. And he plays the son of General Zevo, you know, played by Michael Gambon, who is very much not someone who looks like LL Cool J.
No.
I appreciate that nobody makes, like, adoption jokes. They just accept this. And it's not a big deal at all. And you know through the actions of the characters that they are, in fact, father and son. And I think LL Cool J does an okay job being in this movie. So I just kind of like that, you know, just throwing that out there. Was there nobody else interesting in the movie? Not so much. But again, very kind of weird movie. Devil's Advocate, weird but in a different sense. Kind of a train wreck at times. But okay, so the last movie that I watched recently was, I finished watching it today, was The Room.
Oh, no.
I went in with Riff Track because I couldn't go in alone.
Oh, no.
I think nobody remembers to mention this movie is like 35% softcore porn scenes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I feel so bad for the Riff Track guys because they had to do this whole running gag through all those scenes. Where Disembodio, who's the audio sync robot voice, who will, you know, say a line of the movie to make sure that you're Riff Tracks is synced up with the movie. He comes in and brings some random friend who gets offended by the sex scene in the movie. And they have like a whole story going throughout this whole Riff Tracks about it. But I feel like I fulfilled my nerd duty by watching it, but I don't know if I could watch it again outside of the highlight reel.
I don't think you need to watch it again.
Yeah. Definitely not a comedy by design. I'm not, because I don't care what Tommy Wiseau says. I think he was trying to do something somewhat serious, but didn't really understand because he's super foreign.
Yeah.
Somebody asked, it's like, what the hell is up with his body? He looks like he was acid dipped. I was like, he's European. I wanted to say, well, he's European without the hockey to train him. Because that's how Europeans stay in shape. They play hockey. Speaking of which, I was talking to my father about different leagues all over the world. And now he wants me to get him an Irish hockey jersey to help him buy an Irish hockey jersey. I think it was whether the... I have it linked actually here. That link. All right. Yeah, my father wants to buy a jersey from the Edinburgh Capitals. Because there is, in fact, an Irish Hockey League where they have guys like the Brahead Clan, the Fife Flyers, the Dundee Stars, and the Hull Stingrays.
These names are fantastic.
If I could get my father a Japanese hockey jersey, I could try doing that too with the Asian League.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So that's all kinds of fun. If you wanted to have a hockey jersey with like a big harp on the front, you can totally go buy some European hockey jerseys.
I can't remember. Do the Japanese hockey teams also have the ridiculous animal mascots?
Oh, I remember one of them did when I was looking up their names. I forget what it was, though. I think most of the teams are just named after like a school or something.
Yeah. Aw. That's kind of boring.
Yeah, no Tokyo Giants or whoever else. You think I would know more because I do watch baseball when it's on, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, petty details. So that's kind of what I've been doing. I gotta say, out of those three, enjoyed watching Toys more than either The Devil's Advocate or The Room.
It'd be weird if you liked the other two more.
Well, I wish The Room was more like really funny bad. It's just
the kind of painful like the bad. Fact that
the guy's Art. Or the girl's mother is constantly saying how she has cancer. Well, she says it once, but the Rip Tribe guys are like, "Yeah, my tumor keeps getting bigger. You want to feel this thing?" It's like, "Yeah, I'm probably gonna die soon. Whatever." And all the crap with like Denny, it's like, whose kid does this belong? Who's this kid?
Doesn't matter.
It's so
doesn't
weird.
Matter.
Anyway, so that has been this week's Otaku DX show. I am Veef. You can follow me on Twitter @VF5SS. Allow me to enunciate the things that I am saying to you, or you could just look at the show notes.
One of the two. That might be easier. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm actually thinking about changing my damn name because maybe then it'd be
easier. You already have so many followers. I would just stick with it.
That's true. 132 whole followers as of now. My last follower was Hip Hop Rascals. Rascal spelled with a K.
Oh, damn!
Number one leader in social network promotion, .. I can't read the rest.
Dag, yo.
Yeah, but you can come in contact with us at those two Twitter handles and also at @VeefAndDeef. And you can send us an email at VeefAndDeef@gmail.com. I wonder if anyone's going to do that or not. We'll find out eventually. I check it like once a month, so
you should keep up on that. All right, guys, so this has been Veef and Deef signing off.